Folks, welcome to episode 101 of the Beige and Brown Podcast. This is me, your host, Theo3ND. We thank you for joining us live here on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you for joining us this lovely Thursday afternoon. Folks, we have a returning guest. And myself, on behalf of my co-host, Bob Beige, we're honored to have one of the best in this industry, a gentleman from the Midwest like us who has covered sports over 20 years and just has a plethora of knowledge, not only in sports, but as a food critic, in the automotive industry, and also as a freelance writer. Folks, that's right. We're joined by one of the best in the industry, folks. We're joined by the great from Charlotte Observer, Queen City, and also the Charlotte Hornets. Dear, how are you doing this afternoon?
Really good, Theo. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, dear. I really am just excited and glad to have you back on after a few years of hiatus. And just, our audience is really fortunate to have you on. We enjoyed your stories last time of Yao Ming and Isaiah Thomas and just some of your encounters around the NBA about, from Bill Cartwright and even from some of your journalistic knowledge as well that you have for over the years.
I appreciate it. Glad to be back.
And just so I can better, I'm just making sure I'm correct, Daryl. You're still there, and I know we talked about off in the pre-production meeting that you're, of course, still covering the Hornets and the Charlotte Observer and your website, Queen City. Are there any other current projects that our audience at BNB Nation can follow you on right now or anything you have coming up this summer that you're working on with anyone else?
No, mainly I'm writing sports for Queen City mainly. I've done a freelance story before for the Charlotte Observers. I've been covering the Hornets and the Panthers locally here, and I've written some stories about the AAA baseball team, the Knights, too, but I have been covering the two professional teams here in the last couple of years.
I know we spoke off the air. I know one of the more exciting, and I know you're there every night to see definitely one of the younger fans' favorite players they've got to follow over the years, LaMelo Ball, BBB. I know you can maybe not can go into maybe speaking generalities, Daryl, but we don't know after the stepping down of Steve Clifford yesterday. Of course, we wish him the best in his future endeavors, but what do you think the Hornets need to do maybe in the offseason? We know this season is winding down. What is their need, you think, in the draft? I mean, we saw them take my guy, Mark Williams, from Duke a few years ago, and maybe that was another Jordan hometown move. Jordan seems to love the for lack of a better term, the Duke guys are the big stiff guys from North Carolina that added on that squad. But what do you think the Hornets need to do moving forward to build around Melo and Miles Bridges?
You know, I asked a question to Steve Clifford yesterday. I've asked it to him earlier in the season. They've had a lot of injuries, and they've had injuries in the past too. LaMelo always seems to get hurt. And I've questioned somewhat on the training staff with what they're doing, maybe how they're working the players, how they're training them, what's going on with that. Because there's so many guys out. I mean, they got Seth Curry in one of the trades. Seth Curry's out for the season. Cody Martin, basically, he missed a lot of the season at the start of the season. He was out. He came back. He was playing well. And when he was playing well, they were actually playing better. That was shortly after the trade deadline when they added several new players. All of a sudden, Cody Martin went out again. He's gone for the rest of the season. LaMelo got shut down. Mark Williams hurt his back, and he's been out. I don't think he's coming back either. So they've had all these players missing so many games, and something to me doesn't seem right. The Chicago Bulls had the same issues when I was covering them, and they constantly had players, a lot of players missing a lot of games. And they finally did something with the training staff. And I think the training has something to do with it. He said it was more of kind of injuries happening and not like pulled hamstrings or that type of thing. But something to me still comes back to the training staff or how they're training in some way or other and what LaMelo is doing, why he can't stay on the court too. And if he can't stay on the court and you're paying him $260 million, how are you going to get better as a team if he's supposedly your main guy? Although, I think there could be another main guy on the team. And I asked him a question kind of along those, not exactly along those lines. I asked him that question last night. I'm talking about Brandon Miller. Have you had a chance to watch much of Brandon Miller?
I recently have, just in highlights, because I remember all the unnecessary bashing, of course, from fans during the summer league and overreacting. But he has really come on tremendously, as from what I've seen, with his size and his ability to shoot the ball and be versatile. He really has made a push in the last second half of the season.
You see, I watched a lot of Brandon Miller last year at Alabama because I was watching Alabama games because I like the point guard of theirs named Javon Quinterly. So I've seen him a lot. So I've obviously been watching him this year. So he's coming off of three consecutive Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month awards. And so I asked him after the game if he has any other aspirations. I said, you've had a really good rookie season and all. Like, what else are you looking for in your future as far as your goals of what you want to accomplish? Basically, I was asking him more individually. So he starts answering the question, I just want to win. I just want to help this team win. That's all I'm interested in, is helping this team win.
And who would you compare him to, Daryl, for our younger audience at the Beige and Brown podcast? Is not saying no to a, not saying any Hall of Famers or greats, but is there any player in the league, a contemporary of his, that Brandon Miller's style of play may remind our fans of?
I'm thinking a guy he kind of plays like, and a guy that's considered one of the best in the league, is Jason Tatum.
That's a huge compliment, Daryl.
I'll tell you what, I actually think he could be better than Jason Tatum. From watching Tatum, Tatum takes a lot of bad three-point shots. Tatum throws them all up there, too. I mean, sometimes he's hitting them, or a lot of times he's hitting them. Obviously, he's a really good player, so they'll go in. Other times he's not hitting them. He doesn't look as good. The team doesn't look as good. But Brandon Miller could shoot from outside. Brandon Miller could handle the ball. Brandon Miller could pass. Brandon Miller could play defense. He's not rebounding as well as I thought he would. He rebounded better at Alabama than he's doing with the Hornets. I don't know if he's not concentrating on as much. But what I wanted to get to, too, when I asked him the question and he went on where I'm just worried, I want the team to win, et cetera, et cetera, I kind of said to him, what about individual accomplishments? Because I was thinking of him as a future All-NBA performer, whether he's first, sure, second team, or third. And absolutely, I wanted him to kind of say that. And he goes, well, I'm not really interested in that. And I said to him, well, if you're an All-NBA player, it probably also means you're winning. Because if you think about it, how many guys are voted to the All-NBA teams from teams that are on the bottom of the league?
That's a short list, yeah.
Exactly. So if you're All-NBA, one of the top two, three teams, your team's probably doing good because it goes together with winning. So that's why I wanted him to think. He's given a pat answer, and I've noticed him in press conferences. He doesn't really say an awful lot and just gives a stock answer. So I was trying to get him to say, hey, I do have aspirations. I want to be one of the best players in the league and stuff. And I think he does. He just doesn't want to say it to the media.
Folks, you're listening to Daryl Horowitz of the Charlotte Hornets here, a longtime veteran of Chicago sports and media. And Daryl, before we transition over to the Panthers and segue, why have you on that topic? One of our other mentors and someone I'm sure you know in the industry, Kwame Fisher-Jones. You speaking of Jason Tatum, we and him got in a heated debate on his show, Unparalleled Sports Talk, with Kwame Fisher-Jones about Jason Tatum. Daryl, I'm a big Duke fan. Everybody at Beijing Brown Podcast knows I'm a huge Blue Devil fan. I have been my whole life. And Daryl, simply, the Boston Celtics have won 60 games. They're the best team in the NBA. Jason Tatum is the best player on the best team in the NBA. But our contemporary, Kwame Fisher-Jones, feels like Jason Tatum is not an MVP candidate this season. How do you feel about that, Daryl? Do you think he should be in the MVP conversation?
I think Boston's got a really good team. And if you have a really good team, you should have a really good record. I personally wouldn't put Jason Tatum in the MVP voting either. If you're looking at top
three
guys,
you guys hurting me.
Yep, I can't help it. You got the wrong guy on this one. I don't think he's a really good player, but I would not put him up for the MVP. Again, look at the team Boston's got. Boston's got a terrific team. If you look all around. And the only one thing I'm surprised is Porzingis has not got injured, because Porzingis always gets hurt. They've been lucky with that.
Like did in Dallas, there. I'm a Porzingis fan, there. Maybe I'm the idiot. I'm the novice in the room. Maybe because he was 7'3" and I thought he was gonna, you know, be the second coming of Ralph Sampson. I've always been impressed with Porzingis. I know a lot of people aren't, but I'm glad he's playing well on a winning team.
Now, Porzingis is a good player. I'm just saying he always gets hurt. He always gets injured. See, sure. Here's the key, and this is what you got to look at with Victor Wembanyama. Porzingis is 7'3". 7'3" is the height where you're a lot more likely to start having injuries than any other height. You got to be 7'3" or more. Those are the guys that normally get injured. So with Wembanyama being 7'4", it's a big risk in the future. I love him. I think the kid's terrific. I mean, I can't believe a guy 7'4 could do what he does. He plays like he's 6'4, except when he plays like he's 7'4. You know, that's the difference. Wow. He plays like 6'4 while being 7'4, which is like incredible. I'm just hoping that he doesn't have the things that happen to guys that are his height happen to him, because that would be a shame. But the Boston, like I said, in general, they got a great team. Now, I think in the playoffs, are they going to be missing the defensive center like a Robert Williams? And even had Grant Williams was a defensive guy too, that is a tough guy that just kind of gets in other people's faces and their bodies. They're missing a couple of the guys that are good guys to have in the playoffs. Now, the thing is, I really don't think the East is that good right now. The East has kind of gone down where I don't know if Boston's going to have that tough a competition playing in the playoffs this year. So they might have might be fairly easy in the East for them if all their players hold up and don't get hurt.
And Darryl, I apologize to yourself and audience. I know I'm getting off topic, but I just wanted to definitely hit on that point because you brought up the number one pick in the draft, Victor Wembanyama. I mean, we saw him have a 40-point, 20-rebound game. We saw him go toe-to-toe with arguably the best player in the NBA, the reigning finals MVP, Nikola Jokic. If I could read to you briefly two statements from two of the best players we just mentioned early in the season. This is early in the season, Darryl, when asked about Victor Wembanyama. Luka Doncic just simply said he paused and looked at the, you know, press and said, think about it. He said, this is the worst he's ever going to be. He said, what do you guys think he's going to do in year 3 and 4? This is as bad as he's ever going to get. And he's already, you know, got veterans like myself and all-stars afraid. And the other night, more recently, towards the end of the season, Nikola Jokic paid him a high compliment and just said that, you know, Victor Wembanyama has the attitude and the desire and the passion to get better every night. And he says that that's something that the humility, the attitude and the desire to be one of the best players ever. And that's two high comments from probably two of the top 10 players in the NBA. Do you think it's a done deal, closing on that comment, Darryl? Do you think it's a done deal that he has cemented the MVP, the Rookie of the Year, over Chet and Brandon Miller?
Well, I don't think Brandon Miller is going to be in the voting for Rookie of the Year whatsoever. I mean, as far as winning it.
No third place finish for him?
Well, no third place, yeah. I'm saying winning it. I'm talking about competing to win it.
Yeah, Chet had a great year. I think Chet's been phenomenal, but SGA.
I'd say it's between Chet and Victor Wembanyama, but I'm thinking Wembanyama with the games he's had, the incredible things he's done. I'm thinking he's going to win it. The only reason he wouldn't win it is because, you know, obviously San Antonio's record's really bad and OKC's record's really good. So if they're going to give it on record, Holmgren's going to get it. If they're going to give it on what they can do on the court, not that Holmgren's not a really good player too, but Wembanyama, I'm not normally a LeBron, the biggest fan of LeBron necessarily, but LeBron called him an alien before he ever played in the NBA.
And he's from absolutely another
world. He is from another world. I've never seen a guy like him that big, especially.
Yeah, maybe the only, you know, as I know you being a savant and a historian of basketball, maybe Ralph Sampson might have been the closest as far as the ability to do what he does. I mean, I'm sure back in the 80s, seeing Ralph Sampson dribble the ball up the court, scared the daylights out of people with Olajuwon, but definitely. Folks, you're listening to Darryl Horwood. Mm-hmm.
Basically the same height, but not the same game. Sampson never lived up to the billing. This guy,
right, and to your point, the injuries caught Sampson very early.
Yeah, and Wembanyama is, to me, exceeding the billing. I mean, I heard about him all the time. I really didn't watch the European basketball. I didn't watch
him neither did
before he came here. And I thought, okay, this guy, they're really hyping him. I'm sure he's really good. I was blown away when I watched him. I'm like, oh my God, how can you, you want to scream out loud. How can that guy at that height do what he does? I can't imagine what he's going to be. He's incredible.
Yeah, I think he kind of makes the novice fans, even the ones that maybe casually watch the All-Star game or playoffs, sit down and at least watch the highlights every night, because that's it's like Shohei Ohtani in baseball, or, you know, when we saw Devin Hester in Chicago, something that we just maybe see once in a lifetime. And folks, you're listening to Daryl Horowitz on the Bajor Brown Podcast. You're live on Spotify and Apple Music, a former editor at the Heckler in Chicago, a Chicago fan. This is one of your own, one of the best from Chicago, a former client advisor there in Oak Park, the world-renowned food clinic, critic, excuse me, and also a Bleacher Report as well. Daryl, you spoke earlier, mentioned about your coverage with the Panthers. We know this has been a hot and heavy offseason. We've seen your beloved Bears trade Justin Fields to Pittsburgh to be with Russell Wilson. We've seen them make some other moves, around the draft. But what are your thoughts, Daryl, just on maybe two things on the Panthers, the team you cover, and on your hometown Bears, on maybe free agency in general, heading into the NFL draft?
Well, with the Panthers, this is going to be the second year for Bryce Young. They gave up, obviously, a ton to get him. And he had a tough rookie year. They brought in a complete new coaching staff. It was everything was about Bryce Young. I mean, they won 7 games the year before. And they brought in a brand new coaching staff, considered with a whole bunch of guys that could work with the quarterback. And you had the first pick in the draft, and you got the quarterback, Bryce Young. And everything was looking up. And then the Panthers ended up winning 2 games all season. And their draft pick that's going to the Bears is going to be the first pick in the draft. But Bryce Young, so I saw him you might not know this. I actually saw him at the press conference last year. I asked Bryce Young a question. Everyone questioned Bryce Young about his height. He's always asked about his height. And it's always in a negative way. I asked Bryce Young the question. I said, you've been asked about your height all the time, but I'm not sure if you've ever been asked this question before. And I went, how is your height actually an advantage for you? And his face lit up. He goes, oh, my father's going to be so happy you asked that question. And then he went on for about 1 minute and 11 seconds. And then at the end, he finally went again, thank you. Thank you so much for asking that question. You could actually find that on YouTube. It's Bryce Young Size YouTube. It's on there if you do that, for 1 minute and 11 seconds, me asking him the question and him giving his answer. So it really resonated here in Charlotte. Every story had that on there. Every news, sports show on the news, on the radio, every story written here, all had to do with that size question. And here's an issue. I mean, obviously his first year wasn't as good as, he didn't have a lot to work with. Their offensive line was a sieve. I mean, people were running through it all the time. I think he had the second most sacks ever for a rookie quarterback, ever.
That's the stat of the day there, Horst, to steal from the great Dan Patrick. That's the stat of the day there. Holy cow.
Yeah, and he didn't have hardly anyone to throw to. Adam Thielen was the only good receiver he really had to throw to.
Adam Thielen was 80 years old. He's at an age.
He looks great for his age, though, Adam Thielen. Yes, I interviewed him in the locker room. I said, he looks good for 80.
He's right there, Robert Pierce, right?
Yeah, also, the running game wasn't good. I mean, it was a total mess last year. I mean, they were boring as hell to watch. They reminded me of my years growing up watching the Bears, but it was a terrible season. it was an absolutely terrible season, though. And I'll tell you what, I was talking about Jim Harbaugh brought in, because one of the problems with the Panthers is, who's their owner? David Tepper. David Tepper mixes in with everything. And last year, Frank Reich talked about how he did not look forward to his weekly meetings with David Tepper, especially obviously after a loss. And I don't think any coach would really want to be dealing with that. So I thought if you got Jim Harbaugh would take David Tepper and say, hey, you know what? If you hired me as your coach. I'm going to be your coach. So you sit in your owner's box, you keep your mouth shut, and you watch the games, and I'll coach the team, and maybe we'll meet, like, you know, mid-season, and then we'll meet after the season. I'm not meeting with you every week. And in other words, not let David Tepper run over him. Obviously, they did not hire Jim Harbaugh. But I was really worried about who they were going to hire as the coach because I thought it was a situation built for failure. I really liked the hire. I really liked Dave Canales, the guy they hired. So he was with Seattle for a long time. He really helped Geno Smith, like, actually have some really good seasons. And then he went to Tampa, and he was the OC there. And Baker Mayfield had a phenomenal year last year with him. I think this guy knows how to get the most out of quarterbacks. And I think that was a great hire of bringing him in as the head coach of the Panthers. So I think that's going to really help Bryce Young. The things I'm worried about with Bryce Young are he actually is 5'10". He's not going to get taller. He's not an uber athlete. He's not like Justin Fields. If Justin Fields is running, you're not catching him from behind. You can catch I would watch Bryce Young running, and I'm seeing these linemen kind of getting closer to him and coming up to him, where that would not be happening with Fields. So, and he doesn't have he's got a good arm. He definitely, when you hear the saying rocket for an arm, you're not putting Bryce Young in that picture with the rocket for an arm. So those are the things I'm worried about. I think he's very smart. He's a good kid and all that. And I think he wants to win. So he's got a fire inside him. I think he's going to be a lot better. And I think he's got the right guy to coach him. I just don't know if the size is going to hold him back from being as good as you would like him to be in the NFL. They need a lot of work. Now, for the Bears, you wanted me to get to the Bears, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, take it to it's your world, Daryl. Do whatever you like. Can you make heads or tails of the Justin Fields trade?
The trade was obviously terrible. They got a sixth-round pick, conditional fourth, if he plays, 51% of the snaps this year, which he has an opportunity to do possibly with Russell Wilson as their other quarterback. So they might want to go to Justin Fields. I never thought Justin Fields got a fair opportunity in Chicago. That's what bothered me. I never said he's great, but I said he's got the ability to be. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's got a really good arm, and he never had anything around him. I mean, he came into a really bad situation his first year with a lame duck head coach and lame duck general manager, and they got fired after his first year. Then he comes, with a brand new general manager who never was a general manager before, a brand new head coach who was never a head coach before, and a defensive coach, not an offensive coach either, which most of the teams in the NFL, we're talking basketball, are going to.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
they're going to offensive-minded guys, and here you hired a defensive coach, and they tore the whole team down the first year, so he had no offensive line. He had terrible receivers. He had no opportunity whatsoever, and he had a first-time offensive coordinator, too, that really did not have a offensive plan built to his skill set. I mean, what I hate in any sport is I hate coaches that have their particular way of doing things. And the players got to adapt. That they can't adapt to the players.
And Daryl, Tom Thibodeau has one way or the highway.
Yeah. I mean, and so you had Matt Eberflus. Matt Eberflus is a cover two guy. So you got basically an ancient defense. And he's got to have all of his guys. He's got to have a three technique. He's got to have this. He's got to have that all to fit his defense. Why can't a coach take the players he has and make it work with them? So that's what I don't like. So here you had a guy in Justin Fields that's got certain skills that are really above average, like really elite. But why can't you find a way to utilize what talent he has to make him the best he can be? And they did not do that. And I really dislike, like I said, this is my if you're a coach and this is your system and you're not adaptable, I don't want that. To me, that's not a good coach. If you can't adapt, I don't want that person as a coach. And so again, I don't like what they particularly did with Fields. I don't think he got a fair shot, and I hope he does get the opportunity because he does have the ability. I've never said he's going to be a great quarterback, but he has the ability to be that if he had the right players around him, the right system to work with, I would want him to at least see him with that and then see how good he can be. And now, meanwhile, they're drafting Caleb Williams, number one. That's a given. There's no question about that. And it's been that way for a long time. A lot of people have had conjecture on it. I've known for a long time. And no, I'm not a confidant of Ryan Poles. I just know things from
or
watching
Ryan Pace. We need one of the Ryans.
Well, yeah. Well, they always really fired. Funny. They hired Ryan and Matt after firing Ryan and Matt.
Yes,
can you believe that? I mean, who does that? You already have a negative thing with two guys with the same name, and then you hire two guys with the exact same name. But yeah, so Ryan Poles didn't tell me I'm drafting Caleb Williams, but I knew all along what he was going to do. So it wasn't really, again, a lot of people are conjecturing, what was he going to do? I already knew what he was going to do. And I'm hoping Caleb Williams is going to be really terrific, because in my lifetime, I wanted to see a really good Bears quarterback, and I've really never seen that, or should I say the word great, but he's going to have a lot more to work with than Justin Fields did. They added Keenan Allen, you know, and they made that trade. Obviously, he had more last year. He did a great job. They've tried. The offensive line to me could still be better. I think with the 9th pick. Now, if I'm the GM, and God, why doesn't a team in some sport hire me as a GM? Like, you know, I would not say football, probably basketball or baseball, either one of them.
We can start that petition right now, Jared, right here on the Bajor Brown podcast. We can definitely get that going.
Yeah, if you could get the word out there.
Twitter and Instagram, LinkedIn.
Baseball and basketball, you could do way worse than hiring me as your GM.
Well, first of all, you got to get a baseball team in Charlotte. You got to get a major league ball club there.
I've wanted there to be a major league club here, but I'm willing to move to be a GM. I don't have to stay in Charlotte if I'm the GM. I just want that to be known too. But as far as that goes, you know, so I just, as the GM, if I were the GM of the Bears, they have the 9th pick right now. So aside from the 1st pick, which we already know what it is, they have the 9th pick. If they don't trade back, see, depending on who's there, I want a receiver at 9, so add another receiver. I want you to stack the offense where you make it, the offense has to be good because you got so many weapons there. That's what I want them to do. Now, Matt Eberflus is a defensive coach, and he says you can never have enough rushers, and I'm talking about pass rushers. And I'm thinking he's going to try to push to get one of the guys that's an edge rusher at the 9 pick. That's the last position I want. I want wide receiver number one if one of the three big guys are there, which are Harrison, who won't be there, Neighbors, and Rome Odun. Now I can't say his name, Odunze, whatever.
You
played
yes.
On LSU. Thank you. I all of a sudden got dyslexia. I couldn't say the words or whatever, but you know who I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
So one of those three, I'd even be possibly interested in Brock Bowers, and he probably will be there at 9. Because he's supposed to be like an out of this world tight end. So you could do the two tight end set and all that. Or an offensive lineman, like maybe Alt from Notre Dame. But those would be the positions. I do not want a defensive guy at 9, period. Do not want that. That's what I'd be doing. I'll be doing the offense, because the Bears have never, ever, ever in my lifetime concentrated on the offense. It's always been defensive, smash mouth football, city of big shoulders, Chicago, all that crap. For once in my life, I want to see offense and double down and triple down on offense and make the offense as strong as possible. So if Caleb Williams is going to be good, well, you're giving them every tool possible to succeed. I want them to do that. And again, I wish they did that for Fields, but I want them to take at 9 another offensive player, preferably a wide receiver, assuming one's there at that point.
And closing that point on NFL talk, well, let's transition to your next, to your other expertise. And just one question I personally had, I know from your first appearance on our show back in 2020, we had spoke the day after. I'm here in Omaha, Nebraska, the hometown of Gale Sayers. And we got rave reviews that time, Daryl, from your assessment. And I just, at that time, and just wanted to rehash that for kind of for nostalgia. We do have a lot of Bears support here of course, in Omaha and Nebraska. And but what were your thoughts? Of course, I know you said that he ran like a gazelle, that he was like he was almost gliding when he was running. But just for the B&B Nation and Bob and everybody, you know, Bob had that poster of Gale Sayers on his wall at home. Can you rehash your thoughts on the great Bob Gale Sayers from Omaha, Nebraska, and what he meant to the Bears organization?
Well, I was a kid when Gale Sayers was on the Bears, so they actually drafted in the same draft Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus. I mean, two of the greatest players in the history of football, absolute legends. They got them both in the same draft. They even got one of their best wide receivers ever in that same draft, Dick Gordon. If you look up Bear history, it's not good with wide receivers, but Dick Gordon was one of their best receivers. I remember watching the Chicago Bears too. Gale Sayers, nobody ran like Gale Sayers. The closest was probably Barry Sanders. And Barry Sanders a lot of times would spend, like he might run 50 yards just to get to the line of scrimmage sometimes.
Talk about off the line, right?
Eluding guys and all that. But Gale Sayers, like I said, he ran a 9.500. So people would always talk, well, he's playing in the 60s. You know, those guys couldn't play now. Gale Sayers ran a 9.5100. Yes, he could play now. Gale Sayers could cut on a dime without slowing down. His leg would be there, and then you're grasping for it as a defender. Next thing you know, it's gone, and he's gone. And I remember the one game he had six touchdowns. Right, six touchdowns in the game, and it was in the mud. I mean, Gale Sayers returned kickoffs or punts, or any time he got a handoff, it could be a touchdown. Gale Sayers was he was the best pure runner ever in football. There's never been a guy, a pure runner, as good as Gale Sayers ever to this day. The best
and
ever.
There I got to the controversial question in Chicago. They might cancel us both. Then why is Sweetness always regarded as the better, best runner, most beloved running back if most say Gale Sayers had the most natural talent?
Walter Payton was a phenomenal football player. Walter Payton could block. He could catch out of the backfield. He could kick. He could punt. He could dance. He could do everything. But Walter Payton was not as good a pure runner as Gale Sayers. And Walter Payton, you could catch him from behind. I never saw anyone catch Gale Sayers from behind. If Gale Sayers is ahead of you, he's gone. It's over. You can catch Payton. You can't. So Walter Payton, if you want to go all around and everything, obviously phenomenal football player, phenomenal running back, everything. If you're going to go all around, you're probably going to say Walter Payton would be number one. But if you want to go just on running, and that's all I'm doing, just pure running, no peer. Gale Sayers is the man.
And Darrell, to close on that, you might appreciate this being from Chicago, a place that has a lot of, you know, tough neighborhoods and legendary places. Gale Sayers grew up in North Omaha, Nebraska. But if you believe this or not, Darrell, you can look it up. But it was in an insert from Bob Gibson's book, Strangers to the Game. Gale Sayers grew up in a housing project called the Fontenelle Housing Projects. And he grew up with, you talk about that draft, Gale Sayers grew up with Bob Gibson. He also grew up with Marlon Briscoe, who's a former NFL quarterback. Mm-hmm. And then you have Ron Boone. So you got like five or six guys. They're all top-level athletes, all grew up in the same housing project there in Omaha, Nebraska, North Omaha, Nebraska. So it's a tremendous bloodline there. And also Bob Boozer as well, a former Chicago Bulls All-Star, number one pick in the draft and won a ring with Kareem and Oscar. So you got a lot of great guys from North Omaha, Nebraska that grew up in those same housing projects as Gale Sayers.
Well, you bring back memories when you say Bob Boozer, because that was the first Chicago Bulls team ever Bob Boozer was on it. And I remember the announcers would go, Bob Boozer, whenever he would, like, you know, score and stuff like that. So I remember that. Like I said, I was a kid. And Bob Boozer, like I said, was a really good player on the team back then. So I definitely, a name from the past that I remember and I hadn't heard for a while.
And you got to think about Darrell, those had to be some great pickup games to watch in those neighborhoods back then. With, you know, and people don't know too, you know, Bob Gibson was a great basketball player as well. He played for Creighton University and also played for the Harlem Globetrotters.
I was
going to
say you played for the Harlem Globetrotters. Exactly. Yeah.
You guys, you had some competitive games there in North Omaha back then with some of those great legends. I know I'm missing Johnny Rogers too. Of course, he also grew up in those same housing projects. The Heisman winner. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a star-studded lineup right there in itself.
Who played in Nebraska, I believe, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep, and had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Yeah, we know for our audience, we know that you are a lot more than go beyond sports. Obviously, you've done a lot of tremendous journalism over your career. You know, like I said, you have a lot of experience. What advice can you give any of our audience that might be, you know, you have an illustrious sales career in the automotive area, also as a self-help and motivational speaker with people regaining their confidence. What from sports or helps you parlay your passion into those industries as well, into sales and into self-help and helping people with personal coaching?
Well, here, I've got a favorite phrase, and actually I've been speaking to Charlotte Schulz in the past month or two also, and I've done that a little bit before, and I want to do more of that. My first story in Chicken Soup for the Soul, it's called The Only Way You Can Fail Is If You Don't Try. And that's something that kind of changed my life, and it had to do with a girl when I was like around 18, and I didn't ask for a number, and it really bothered me. And I wrote down on a 3x5 card at the time, I had the most beautiful girl in the world in my car. From now on, the only way I could fail is if I don't try. And I put that card in my wallet. And every time I was afraid, I reached into my wallet and I pulled that card out and I read it. And I knew as soon as I tried, I already succeeded. I could not fail. Results don't matter. The trying does. So I got really good at picking up girls, let me tell you. I mean, really good.
Well, this is a great, really for the summer and for all of our younger audience out there, the younger men getting ready to go to prom.
But it's funny because I worked with a lot of younger guys in car sales, like a lot of guys that were either high school age or college age. And I gave them that advice. The only way you could fail is if you don't try. And one of the guys said, I went out this weekend. Yeah, thanks for that. I met somebody. And I said, you know, you could use it for other things too. See, that's what I learned when I got a little bit smarter. Not only could you use it to meet somebody, you could also use it for anything you want. Everything I've done, everything I accomplished, I've done it on my own. I didn't work for ESPN where I'm automatically getting into games because my name's on a list because I work for ESPN. Every time I got an opportunity, I took it to the next level and I went and I tried to get I started writing for the Chicago Sports Review because I picked up a paper and said, I started writing for this website. Could I write for you? And the guy says, okay, you could write for me. Well, now I'm doing that. Now I reached out to the Chicago Cubs, the Chicago White Sox, Chicago Bulls, said I write for the Chicago Sports Review. Can I get into the game so I could write about you in the paper? And every time I had an opportunity, I took it to the next level, the next level, next level. That's how I got into radio for over 15 years. That's how I got on TV in Chicago. I always did that. And my theory was the only way I can fail is if I don't try. I've done all these incredible things in my life. And I'm not saying it for me. I'm saying it because of I took those words to heart. And anybody listening, take those words to heart. As long as you try, you already succeeded. And go after whatever you want in life. Because if you go after it and you don't worry about the result, you're going to do incredible things that you'll never believe you did. Because I can't believe the life I've lived and the things I've been able to do. Because when I was high school age, I was saying to those kids last week, I never in a million years thought I would have the life I did. And so you could have that same dreams or your dreams come true too by using those words and never being afraid to go after what you want to go after.
Daryl, you told myself and our great co-host Bob Bajek, your former colleague, about one tip you gave us last time in journalism is always listen, because sometimes people will give you the gems and the answers that you need in the telling of the answer. We are all too busy. You know, we have, you know, two ears and one mouth, but we're all too busy to speak. And a lot of young journalists and people in general in life talk more than we listen, and we miss those gems that people give us. If we're in the auto industry, I have a great friend, a family friend, Cody Gilmore, who's been in the automotive industry over 20 years. Shout out to Cody and his group there at Acura and Honda in Omaha. What would you give the advice to a young person, a woman, male or female, that's starting in the, maybe on the bare bottom, at the bottom of the totem pole, selling cars as a commission salesman, or if they're in the back office, in the business office, making cold calls? What advice would you give them on the day-to-day routine and selling?
Well, Well, for one, you already said listen. So listening is, I learned that really right at the beginning. I think they used to say shut up and listen. And fortunately, I guess I listened because I did shut up and I listened and I took it in. So I learned. So part of it is learning how you can be better. So when I got into car, so I was in, I sold ladies' shoes for years, for about 6 years before I got into car sales.
Are you saying you're Al Bundy in the real life?
Daryl? My God, I don't believe you did that because that's exactly what I thought. I was Al Bundy. Oh my God. Yeah, exactly.
I was as a kid. I'm married with children. So everybody.
That's what I thought. But here's the thing. I was never good selling ladies' shoes. I never cared about it. I didn't like it. I'm meeting girls. I would never tell them I sold ladies' shoes because I was like embarrassed, you know.
That might be a great icebreaker though, Daryl.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I met a lot of girls even when I was doing it, but I would never tell them that's what I did.
As long as you did you meet your wife that way, Daryl? Did you meet your wife at the shoe store?
No, I actually met my wife at the auto show in Chicago.
Off in the States? Or?
No, the auto show is in McCormick Place.
McCormick's Place, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, so the other thing I was going to say is advice for sales, though. Is the key, well, you got to keep your word for one thing, you know, so people got to know they could trust you. So I've got a saying I came up with. If I give you my word, you get better your life on it. And you know what? You'll still be breathing.
Mm.
So in other words, if I give you my word, you can count. I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do. So when people trust you, when they know your word's good, they're going to come back to you. They're going to be like, they're going to like you. They're going to want to deal with you and stuff like that. And here's the other thing. I think I said the word like. Get people to like you. If that's the key to sales, sell yourself. Get them to like you and they're going to buy from you. Like I had customers say to me, I'm not a, you know, whatever, BMW of Orland Park salesman. I'm a Daryl Horowitz salesman or Daryl Horowitz customer, excuse me. That's what they said because they were buying me. I don't care about where I'm working for. I want them to buy me. You know, you could buy a car anywhere. You could go anywhere on the street, whatever, and they've all got people working there, but you could only get me here. So I want them to realize that I'm special, that I'm the one they want to deal with, not everybody else. And I want them to remember me. I would do all different things for people to remember me. When they're talking to 20 different people and they don't remember one person, they'll remember, oh, I remember that guy. Because I would do all kinds of things. I had a book on my desk that said, like, why you should buy from me. And it had tons of pages of all kinds of things in it. Some stuff with cars, but other things about me or things I've done or 10 top reasons to buy from me. All kinds of stuff in there. Like, I had pictures of people that bought cars, like, on poster boards, you know, why you should buy from me and all that type of thing with their or buy your next BMW from me type of thing. And all these people, and so people would walk by, well, you must be a really good salesman. You have all these customers and all that. So everything I would do would get people to notice me, and I wanted to stand out, and I wanted to be the one they thought about when it came to getting a car. So get people to like you, get them to notice you, be different. That's another word I'm really fond of is different. I don't like being like everyone else. I like being different. When I have people say, like, you know, all these people tell me I'm wrong about stuff, I love it because I know who's wrong. And it's the mob mentality that's wrong. It's not the one individual, let me pat myself on the back, genius that actually knows.
To that.
I don't normally do that, but, you know, what the hell? I thought I'd go all out here.
You read my mind. That's a perfect trend segue. You read my mind about books. And if I were a young person, I wanted to learn about journalism, I would read a book by Daryl Horowitz or Bob Bajak. If I wanted to learn about, you know, basketball, I read the book of LaMelo Ball. In sales, Daryl, did you read anybody growing up, like, you know, Les Brown's motivational speakers, Tom Hopkins, Zig Ziglar, you know, Brian Tracy? Did you have any authors that you read their books that you really took gems from?
Wow, Theo, that's not bad. You got 3 out of 4 there. That's a really good percentage in any sport, you know?
I try. I try to be like Bob Bajak. That's who I'm going to be.
This first one you said was Tom Hopkins. Yes, Tom Hopkins. Brian Tracy, I had stuff from him. And the number one guy, you said him second, Zig Ziglar. So when I got into car sales, I wanted to learn about it. I wanted to be a lot better than I was in shoe sales. So I started reading books on sales and how to be a good salesperson. So the first book I bought was Zig Ziglar, Secrets of Closing the Sale. And let me tell you, that is the best sales book I have ever read in my life. I've got so many pages on that highlighted with different things, and I could pick it up anytime, and I would see all of these terrific, like, things that he had to say in there. I mean, it was an incredible book, and I learned so much from Zig Ziglar and those other people. And if you want to be good at anything, you got to learn from people that have done it, have been successful from it. You could adapt your own ways. Maybe you could, you know, pivot and do a little something your special way, but the basics are always still going to be the basics. And I learned so much. Well, here's what one of the things, and I probably already had this in me, but I had to learn it for the sales. Before I got into sales, like especially selling cars, I said, and I told you I was very good at meeting women. I said, if I'm anywhere close to being as good in car sales as I am at meeting women, I'll be really good in this. And I just, for whatever reason, had a gift of gab that I inherited from my mother. My mother could talk to anybody, and she could probably actually aggravate people. Like if you were a manager and she was trying to return something, I guarantee you're going to give her what she wants because you just want to get rid of her. I know how to talk. And so I had like one time at a bar, two girls say to me, where'd you learn to talk like that? I never heard anyone talk like you in my life. So that was part of it. I know how to talk, period. But it was a little bit different when it came to sales, like selling cars, because now people are spending thousands of dollars. So it's a different way of talking. But I learned so much from those books, except especially Zig Ziglar was the number one book, though.
You know, in this day of course, since the pandemic in 2020, since the day of mental health and mental health awareness, with people struggling with different effects from that, what would you tell people struggling with their self-confidence or maybe dealing with emotional issues?
Well, to be honest with you, Theo, I'm not a therapist or anything like that. I'm not licensed to probably say that, but I try to tell people not to dwell on things that are negative. And instead of thinking about the bad things that might have happened in your life or what's getting you down, don't let that get you down and keep you down. And try to think of what, like, you are what you think realistically. If you think you can do it, you probably can. If you think you cannot do it, you're probably right about that too. It's all how you think about anything. And you're going to think, woe is me, and everything's horrible, and the world's against me, and this and that. And you keep on saying that. All you're doing is basically repeat. You're programming your brain to think that way. And you need to start thinking positively, even if you've had a lot of bad things. Here, I'm going to give you one example real quick. So I know what I was good in. I know different things I'm good in and I know what I'm not good in and stuff like that too. So things I was good in, I was always good in, and I was always going to be good in them. But one thing I always said, I know I'm I'm good at sales, for instance, and all that. But I wish I was lucky. I'm not lucky. I don't know why I'm not lucky, but I always wish I was lucky.
No casino tricks for you, dear.
Yeah. And I would say that, and here's the thing. One day I thought about it and I go, why am I not lucky? And I said to myself, maybe I'm not lucky because I think I'm not lucky. What if I changed my way of thinking and thought I was lucky? And I did that. I started doing that. And so I'm in car sales, right? And the dealership I worked at, they would pull cards out of a hat. If you sold a car, they would throw everyone's card in the hat, and they would give away big screen TVs, give away other different things or money bonuses, all kinds of stuff. And they'd have everyone throwing their cards in the hat. And I would start thinking, they're going to say my name. I'd say, Daryl Horowitz, Daryl Horowitz, Daryl Horowitz. I'd be saying it over and over and over again. They're going to say my name. So if someone's reaching their hand in that hat or whatever to pull out the card, I'm saying my name over and over. I'm thinking it. And I want them, like, you know, they're feeling my card calling out to them. So they're passing up someone else's card with a name on it, and they're hearing mine speak to them, and they're pulling my card. And I started winning so often. Other people at the dealership would say, he shouldn't be allowed in, and he wins all the time. And this is the guy who was unlucky. And by the way, I once had a card pulled out of a hat at a Cub game when I was working with Nissan, and I threw out the first pitch at a Cub game. And wow. I always considered myself unlucky, and I wasn't doing that trick back then. I was not doing that at that time. But I always considered myself unlucky. But there were a lot of things that probably happened in my life that I probably was lucky, that I didn't consider it lucky. So you also maybe got to realize things too. I might have been lucky all along and didn't even realize it, but I actually did make myself lucky with what I just told you about.
What you thought, if you believe you can achieve, right? The power of the mind, and it comes from the good book. If people believe in the good book and are believers, or if they believe in karma, it's just what your mind can believe you can achieve. And Daryl, heading into our final segment, we want to kind of save a little bit, hoping for, if you have time in your schedule, to come back and join us later this summer or spring when Bob is on as well. We thank him. I know he was busy today, but as a fun thing, we know you are a world-renowned food critic. And we just had three quick, fun questions for you in closing. We again really appreciate your time here at the Beige Brown Podcast. Remember, you can catch the replay of this on the free Odyssey app with CBS Sports, and also on TuneIn Radio. And we have three quick, fun questions for you, Daryl. You being a Chicago guy and the city of broad shoulders being world renowned for pizza. They're all the famous question, Daryl. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Well, it's a real easy answer. I have never in my life eaten a pizza with pineapple on it. How's that?
Oh, boy. Have you ever been to Hawaii? Have you ever tried a Hawaiian pizza? what would make Daryl Horowitz, the world-renowned food critic, try pineapple on pizza?
I would try anything. I just normally wouldn't order a pizza with pineapple on it. And I happen to like pineapple a lot, believe me. I actually have a pineapple in the house right now that I'm ready to cut up as soon as it's ripe. I just don't think it necessarily goes with pizza, but I'll try anything. And I have been to Hawaii, by the way, and had a great time there, and Maui and all that stuff. So I've been to Hawaii, so I've got that question taken care of there for you.
And I guess we're cheating, Daryl, here. It's kind of a two-half question. Since you are, again, from Chicago, can you give the people that may be visiting this summer, their audience that might be in Chicago for the first time, maybe one or two places that you would recommend for pizza in Chicago? Maybe not Giordano's or Luminati's. Those are the two, tourist sites, as they say, but any mom-and-pop places that they should attend?
Well, I really knew the tourist places rather than the mom and pop place. Well, I'll tell you what, the first pizza I ever had, deep dish or pan pizza, whatever you want to call it, was Luminati's when I was 16 years old in Lincolnwood. That was the original store. And I remember I finished everyone else's pizza left on their plate when they didn't. Like, I loved it. So Luminati's is actually my favorite of the pan pizza. They also have tavern-style pizza in Chicago, thin crust and all that, too. I used to have a favorite place growing up called Manzo's, but they stopped doing it years ago, so I can't really recommend anyone to them. Sure. There's another place that's pretty good for regular Chicago pizza that would be more like tavern-style, called Golden Crust Pizza on Kedzie Avenue near the L Stop. But I want to say one other thing if people are visiting Chicago, because – this is something you can't get hardly any other place either. And I don't even know if you know it, Theo. Are you familiar with Italian beef?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Portillo's and many other, Al's in Warrenville, many places.
Okay. So, all right. Portillo's, place people know. But Portillo's is, like, to me, almost generic Italian beef. If they had a Portillo's where I live, I would go there because it is Italian beef. But Al's Italian Beef on Taylor Street.
Yes, so
Little Italy neighborhood, and it's right across the street from Mario's Italian Ice, which opens May 1st. They open May 1st. They close right about
we're getting there.
They close about the middle of September. I always said, so summertime, I'd always get an Al's beef, and I would get Mario's Italian Ice. But Al's Beef. If you've never had an Italian beef, if you're someone listening to the show and go, what the hell is an Italian beef? It's kind of like roast beef, but it's dipped and cooked in all these juices and spices and stuff like that. And it's got this like French bread, and you have like, you can either get sweet peppers or get what I get, which is giardiniera, which is like spicy peppers and other stuff on there. And then you get it dipped in that au jus. And so it's all nice and wet. And then you bite into it. And by the way, you want to have a lot of napkins because it's going to be messy. But that tastes so good. And yeah, every time, since I left Chicago, every time I've come back to Chicago, including in March this year, so I was just there in March, I stop at Al's Beef before I stop anywhere else. I don't go to my hotel. I don't go anywhere until I go to Al's Beef first.
That's the first of it. Speaking of that, we got one quick of your question about, I was going to, my personal question, my mom's favorite thing, one thing was popcorn, and a lot of my family members included, feel like Garrett's popcorn is supreme. Is there any other popcorn place you would recommend in Chicago?
Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to eat popcorn anymore because of diverticulitis, but my wife is a big popcorn fan, and she would highly recommend Garrett's and often tries to pick up Garrett's popcorn. So Garrett's is a good choice for sure. I remember as a kid, and I was able to eat it then, walking downtown Chicago, and they used to have their doors open in the winter, and you would smell that smell wafting down the street. And you would just kind of like, you had to follow the smell into their store. So I always liked their popcorn at Garrett's. Garrett's is really good.
And the last fun one, Daryl, of course, before we wrap it up, is Chicago hot dogs. Have you ever put ketchup on a hot dog in your life?
I think I'm going to hang up on you, Theo. How dare you?
I knew I said the offensive word there.
I will put it on fries, though. I don't think I've ever had it on a hot dog. I don't remember everything as a kid. I'll tell you what, to be honest with you, I don't necessarily love hot dogs. Like, I don't go out of my way to get a hot dog. In fact, when I go to Chicago, I normally don't get a hot dog most of the time. I'd almost prefer a Polish sausage, if anything, over the hot dog.
Okay, can you explain to the audience really quick, what is it included in a real Chicago-style hot dog? Because there's many imitators across the country.
Well, nobody knows what's in a hot dog, and that's what they say. You don't want to know because you might not eat it if you knew what was in a hot dog, right? They grind all the things they don't want to use for anything else. So it's like, you know, the type of stuff that's like the worst things that they don't utilize for everything. Oh, we'll grind it up and make this thing called a hot dog. So, I mean, I don't know if anyone knows other than the people that are grinding it up what exactly is in it. The place that I used to like, you might have heard of it. It's been closed for several years now, but everyone knew about it. If you're a foodie, you definitely knew this place. And I was a regular there, and the guy knew my name. He'd see me, he would say, Daryl, hot dogs. Do you ever hear of hot dogs?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Hot dogs was known nationwide. I mean, you could go there and wait in line for two
almost
hours
like
or
Johnny's
more.
Known nationwide.
What's that?
Almost like Johnny's Red Hots. That was also another one.
Johnny's Red Hots? Where's that from?
Red Hots. Oh, they were on Taylor Street and also in the burbs as well.
No, I think you're thinking of Johnny's Beef. It's in Elmwood Park.
Johnny's Beef.
That's the place. When you said Johnny's, I'm immediately thinking Johnny's Beef. That's the. But by the way, for people, for Al's Beef, don't go to the chain. Don't go to any of the franchise ones. You only go to the one on Taylor. The flagship. That's the one where it's the real Al's Italian Beef. The other ones, I can't guarantee how good it's going to be. I know it's going to be good at Al's on Taylor.
Yeah. And in closing, Daryl, can you let our audience here at the Beijing Brown Podcast know where they can find you on social media or LinkedIn, or do you have anything coming up soon? Are you keynote speaking anywhere, or do you have any engagements in Charlotte or Chicago?
Well, I'm actually working on new ones in Charlotte. Right, this past week has been spring vacation, so I was going to reach out to more schools since I got done speaking to a few of people that reached out to me and try to set things up. And generally, people could probably find me, I would say, on Twitter, but I guess it's called X now. At Daryl Horowitz would probably be the best way to find me. Or if they actually read The Athletic, are you familiar with The Athletic?
Yes, absolutely.
If anyone wants to look up Daryl H on The Athletic, now I don't write for The Athletic, I comment on The Athletic, but if you look up any Chicago stories, like baseball, the Cubs, the football, the Bears, Bulls, and you see Daryl H there, I am the one that everyone comments to. I am the one that probably most people hate. And and I'm the one that's, again, always basically right, because the ones that all hate me because I say the exact opposite of what they say. But I am really well known on, and they should be, I don't know why they don't hire me, because if you want clicks, I guarantee you, you'll get clicks with my writing, period. I'll put in this, just some innocuous comment, and there'll be tons. You'll look, if you'll see, tons of comments almost every time I comment at anything compared to anyone else. And they had something on there called the Baseball 100. I don't know if you heard of that before.
No, I have not.
They had that several years ago. So there's an author, he actually lives in Charlotte, named Joe Posnansky. And he's very well known. The people that like into sabermetrics really like him. Now, I'm not into sabermetrics, but he did the Baseball 100, which was the top, in his opinion, 100 players in Major League Baseball history. And I used to comment on that, you know, all the time. There were all kinds of regular people that commented on that story, waiting for the next player, and give your opinion, depending who that was and what he, you know, had to say about them and your thoughts on where he ranked them. So they had all these people that commented on that all the time. Of everyone that commented on the Baseball 100, people that were following, keeping stats, I was the number one person that would get the most comments on whatever I said. And I would also have people talking, looking forward, saying, we're looking forward to your comment once this guy's name comes up. We're looking forward to read what you have to say. I mean, all the time this would happen. I mean, it was a perfect scenario that they should hire me, because I guarantee you I would get more clicks on that site than anyone who writes for that site. Because on Bleacher Report, I was one of the most commented on persons on Bleacher Report, even though I wasn't a featured writer, because I don't want them to tell me what to write. I wanted to write whatever I wanted to write, not them dictating to me. And plus, I had a full-time job, so I could only write when I was able to write. But when I
spare time, yeah, absolutely.
When I left Bleacher Report, I was one of the top 25 most commented people on the whole site, despite not having the algorithm advantages that a featured writer had. So I guarantee you, and when they did the Basketball 75, similar to the Baseball 100, a different person did the Basketball 75. It might have been multiple people on that one. And I missed it at the beginning, so I didn't get in right at the beginning. Again, on that one, once I got in, I was like about the most commented person or one of the top five, period, even though I didn't get in right away. And people would say the same thing, looking forward to what Daryl has to say about it. So whatever I write, people look forward to what I have to say, because I'm very opinionated. I don't think like everyone else. And I say what I think, and I don't give a blank what anyone else thinks. Because, like you said, I'm strong enough that I don't care what other people think about me, think about what I have to say. Because, again, if you worry about what everyone else says or what everyone else thinks about you, you're not going to do anything. You're worried they're going to think like, you know, or talk about you, or look at that person fail. I could give a, you know what, about what anyone else thinks.
Okay, so, you've been pleasure to hear the voice of a national treasure, a Chicago icon, and Daryl Horowitz, one of the true pioneers in the industry of, you know, just freelancing sports writing in Chicago, food critic, sales guru expertise. And we definitely, on behalf of myself and Bob Bajek and BNB Nation, look forward, Daryl, to having you on, hopefully maybe multiple times this summer and spring as we get into baseball, as we get into, you know, other fun non-sports topics as well. We have a couple open panels on health and things like that coming up. So we definitely hope that you're able to make those invites back, Daryl, and we appreciate your time here on the 101st edition of the Bajek and Brown podcast. We want you to look forward to the other episodes dropping this week as well with some other featured guests. And folks, on behalf of Daryl Horowitz and my co-host Bob Bajek, we want to thank you for listening here live this afternoon on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And always remember, you can catch the replay on the free Odyssey app and TuneIn Radio. If you'd like to support the channel and the podcast, the station, definitely you can find us at Bajek and Brown on Venmo, Cash App, and Zelle. We definitely appreciate all the support from the Johnson family and Bolingbroke.